You ready for some coffee, honey?
Absolutely.
I'll pour.
Great coffee. I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli.
And I'm Linda Martinelli.
And we are Talking
While Married.
Well, Ron and Linda, still on the road in Temecula, California.
Well, it's been a nice trip. We got to go out to eat here and there. We got to see all the little Great Dane puppies that my sister has.
You know, I like staying with John and Lisa because they're always involved in something. And, you know, raising those gigantic Great Danes and that female Great Dane with the 9 puppies and 8 girls and 1 boy. And John's going to take the boy.
Right.
You know.
And they're just as cute as can be right now.
Yeah. And I really enjoyed having dinner with them last night. John's a phenomenal fisherman and prepared just sort of a Mexican seafood festival, right? We had all different types of seafood and, you know, tacos, camarones, and just some really great stuff and good cold beer. And I just thoroughly enjoyed it. And I loved to play with the puppies. You and me were immersed with puppies.
Immersed. I'm going to put a picture of that up on our Facebook because that was really cute.
Well, I know when we were out there with the puppies, she was taking all sorts of pictures of us. So I got to see what the pictures look like.
Yeah.
They're so cute. I can't tell them apart. They're so identical.
Well, while we're having all this fun here, there's lots of things happening in the world, and I want to talk about a few of them.
Well, let's do that.
Well, the first one is I want to talk about Chelsea Clinton.
Okay.
Who's really a chip off the old block of her mom.
Oh, of her mom. Yeah, for
of
sure.
Of her mom.
Yeah.
She really holds all the opinions that her mom holds, mostly. I mean, actually, there are a few that she disagrees with, but for the most part, she really, you know, has the same type of mentality that Hillary has about everything, and she also is on the Bash Trump
book tour.
Yeah,
right?
book tour. Right. She has a new book out, and it's called She Persisted Around the World. So I'm assuming that that's about her mom.
Of course it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, something that she said, she was on Stephen Colbert.
Oh, one of my favorite buddies.
And one of the things that she said that I just really take exception to is that she said that now, because of President Trump, not hundreds, but thousands of school kids are citing the president as they're demeaning a little girl, or they're chanting, build a wall, in an attempt to demean and degrade brown children. Where do those stats come from, really?
Well, you know, this is all made up stuff, okay? And you mark my words, Chelsea Clinton is going to run for a congressional seat. You just wait, okay? And they've got money of what's left in that Clinton Foundation. And oh, by the way, now that Clinton is neither of the Clintons, Bill or Hillary, are in power anymore, and she had no chance for the presidency, all the tens of millions of dollars that were going into that Clinton campaign from all sorts of people, mostly internationally, guess what? All that money is dried up.
Well, it has, but I understand that they are kind of reinvigorating that whole charity, and we'll see where that goes, if money's going to come into it or not. Another thing that Chelsea says, and I'm telling you, this is just shades of Hillary. She's telling the Brits that when President Trump goes over to England to visit them
In July,
that to protest. She's telling the Brits across the pond to protest. I just think that this is despicable behavior.
Well, you know, the timing is also bad, too, because we just had Harry and Meghan, you know, a United States citizen, get married just a couple of weeks ago. And that has been, there's been nothing but talk about reinvigorating the decades-old relationship between the United States and Great Britain. So their timing is way off on this. I don't think this is going to resonate with the Brits.
Well, I hope it doesn't. The thing that bothers me so much about this is here's another Clinton out there bad-mouthing the president and saying that our country is in wreckage at this moment because of President Trump. And I don't know, from my perspective, when I'm seeing people have more money in their pockets, I'm seeing their health care at least somewhat better, because we've taken out some of the really bad things out of Obamacare already, and we're going to go back after it again.
And housing is up and employment's up.
Exactly.
And the respect for the United States around the world is way up.
Illegal immigration is down.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're in a great spot. You know, notice who's absent in this argument right now, in this vitriol, is Bill Clinton, a former president of the United States.
He has been absent. I don't know that he agrees with everything that his wife and daughter are doing and saying, but it seems like he wants to stay out of the fray. But then again, my belief is that there's absolutely no marital relationship between Bill and Hillary anyway. And so I think that when they are together, that's the false look at them and not the real look. The real look is him being absent.
Well, you know, I could care less what the relationship is between Hillary and Bill Clinton. I could care less. I never had been anything that's interest me at all. But I look at it in the terms of a person that used to be a president of the United States and did do some good things for the United States while he was president, okay? But he sees, and this is just me speculating, how could you not see the forward movement right now since Trump has been in office? And he hasn't been in office very long. And so when you compare what Trump did to Obama over the last, you know, 8 previous years, how can you make a cogent argument about that as a former president of the United States? You might talk about his personality, but you certainly can't talk about what he's doing to move this country forward.
Exactly. And, you know, the thing that really bothers me here with Chelsea, just like it did with Hillary, is we're back at throwing names at people. And, you know, so Hillary said exactly the same words as Chelsea just says, that we have to do work on repairing the tone in our country, and that we're exposing the real racist and sexist, homophobic, Islamophobic, anti-Semitic feeling, which is on the rise in the country.
I don't see it.
And why they keep throwing these words at us to make us look bad, to make us feel guilty, I don't know, but this is not true. And I'll tell you, the one person who forwarded all of those adjectives, in my opinion, was President Obama. He's the one who created an environment in which people started to distrust each other and started to distrust law enforcement. And we had all of these words going around in that campaign. It wasn't President Trump using them. It was the Democratic side, to be honest. I mean, it was Hillary using these words. Well, and still now to have Chelsea using the same words and calling all of us, pretty soon it's just going to be that we're all deplorables to her as well.
Well, you know, it bothers me on many levels. Number one, I understand the political intrigue to this, right? If you throw enough spaghetti on the wall, you're going to eventually get something that sticks. And then if you keep making false representations and spewing false narratives, the people eventually believe it because you're the person spewing it constantly, and it's getting forwarded by the mainstream media, you know, which they just did the research that showed that, you know, over 93% of all the stories out there in the mainstream medias are absolutely anti-Trump stories.
Oh, yes.
You know.
Yeah, so who is it that's really doing all of these things, the sexist, homophobic, Islamophobic, all of these things? It's not the you and I's of the world.
No.
It's not the people that we hang out with of the world. It's the other side that are saying these things, that are trying to make people believe it. And I really, really resent that.
Well, you know, as conservatives, you know, obviously we hang around with a lot of conservative people, but we hang around with all sorts of other people that actually have the opposite, you know, politics that we do because they're friends of ours. But you know what? I don't see any of the conservative people that you and I associate with acting the way that, you know, the Democrats or the liberals or the Trump haters represent that they are. You know, I just don't see it. You know, rather, everybody just seems to be on the same sheet of music, and let's get this country together. You know, we were just at Gonzales, you know, Texas, and we did a show on that. And we talked about how there were all sorts of people after that bullfighting event that got together for an after party, and they were all races and, you know, different ages and different political persuasions, and they were just having a blast together. There wasn't any dissension, any disrife, derisiveness. There was absolutely nothing. And this is really the way the vast number of Americans are, and we can't forget that.
No. And when you have people like a George Soros throwing money at every organization to make us look bad and to do false studies and so forth, then that's where we get all of this misinformation. But the truth is, I know at least for you and I, Ron, as we travel around the country doing different things, and we're in a different place quite often, we just don't see it. We just don't see this kind of vitriol amongst the regular everyday American out there. We're working, we're raising our families, we're doing the things that we should be doing, and it's the very few that are causing problems, and it's the false narratives that are causing the problems.
Yeah, you know, just in the last, in the last 3 weeks, Linda, we've been through 9 different states. Okay, been all the way from Washington, D.C., all the way back out here to California. Okay, and, you know, look how many times, you know, we go out to dinner or we're meeting with people or we're doing something, you know, either for leisure, recreation, or for business. And we're contacting scores and scores of people, and we just don't see this. We don't see this derisiveness. We don't see the dislike between people. Actually, we see people that are pretty damn happy about where we are right now.
Right. And what we see is just what I call regular Americans that are just living their lives and that are there to, you know, help us and talk to us and whatever. They're just living their lives. There is none of this baloney going on, and I'm tired of it being thrown in our face as though we are all, you know, some sort of evil people.
Well,
that's
my
gripe for today.
Well, that's okay. and like I said, you know, there is a plan for Chelsea Clinton. I think she will run for political office. I don't know what quite state she's going to run in. I forget where she even lives, but that's just part of that, and we'll see how that works for her. Well, I see that NAACP president from South Carolina, or should I say former president from South Carolina, Jared Moultrie, is back in the news.
Okay.
Well, you remember that last week he went all over the news media and said that he had been racially profiled when he was in a car with his family. He had been unlawfully stopped. He had been accused of having drugs. All of this type of stuff with the officer that stopped him in Timmonsville, South Carolina, and before even making a citizen's complaint, put it out all over the news media. And so after making this complaint about the officer, the chief of police sees all this social media stuff and then pulls the body cam footage, and what do we see is absolutely nothing that Mr. Moultrie had accused this officer of doing took place. Not
right.
One single thing.
In fact, he was nothing but polite. It was just a 4-minute stop, and he sent him on his way.
Correct. And another black activist from the Timmonsville area, who is, I think, either an attorney or a radio show talk host, but certainly an activist, a civil rights activist, he went into the police department to go take a look at the body camera video, and the police let him do it. And even he said that this was total BS.
Yes.
Right? So they had to walk that allegation back. Okay? Well, guess what? Mr. Moultrie is back at it again. All right? And they removed him, by the way. The NAACP removed him from his position as president of the local chapter, and they just, you know, kept him in the organization, maybe on the board or something, but that didn't sit well with him. So Moultrie gets back on social media and now said there were actually 2 officers involved in this thing, and is still saying that he was unlawfully stopped, number one, and he was racially profiled. So
back to the body cam.
Back to the body cam, and the chief wouldn't let this go, and God bless him, all right, for supporting his officer. He shows the body cam again and says, and takes Moultrie on and says, look, you can see everything on that body cam that took place, and you do not see another officer, nor do you hear another officer in that encounter. And as a matter of fact, it was a state trooper that pulled up behind the car stop and simply stood at the door of his own unit and never approached Mr. Moultrie, never said one word to him, never approached his vehicle, and when he saw the first officer was okay, he drove off. Okay, which is standard police procedure.
Well, and this is just, I don't know why he's doubling down on this when he's already been proven wrong. And, you know, this is a guy that doesn't deserve to be in this organization, because all he's doing is he's the type of person that's making race relations worse for no reason. Not only race relations, but relations between the races and police. And there's no reason for this. This is a bad example of somebody that should be in the NAACP at all.
Well, you know what? I'm going to take on the NAACP out of South Carolina in that particular chapter. Okay, because after forwarding all these false narratives and backing this guy without even looking at the body cam footage, the chief of police invited all of them down to take a look at that body cam footage. And no one from the NAACP took the chief up on his offer. So where is the transparency? It's from the police department. Where is the accountability? It's from the police department. Where isn't it? It's from that local chapter of the NAACP. How disgraceful.
Yes. Yep. And this is what we need to get rid of, is these false narratives that are coming out all the time. And here's another one.
Well, you talked about it in your article, right?
No, I didn't talk about Sherita Dixon Cole.
Well, go ahead.
So Sherita Dixon Cole is a lady that was stopped, and she made an accusation against a police officer in Texas, Texas State Trooper Jared Hubbard, and she said that he raped her.
Right. He sexually assaulted her. Right. He threatened her. He raped her, and never made an official complaint to the police department.
No.
Just went right up on social media, got herself an attorney who was talking about filing a lawsuit.
Exactly. And so she goes to the hospital, and when at the hospital, she refuses to be tested.
Well, guess why? It never happened.
Right, it never happened. So again, let's get the body cam. And the body cam shows that absolutely none of this happened whatsoever.
Exactly. And they looked at 2 hours of body cam footage from the beginning of the encounter to the end of the encounter. And Trooper Hubbard was nothing but professional all the way, right from the get-go.
Right. So her attorney had to apologize for, you know, his, because he had come out and made statements against the police officer
as
well.
Her attorney's name, as I remember, is Lee Merritt.
Okay, well, what happens now, one would think that she would be prosecuted for these false allegations. However, because of some technicality that she did not make these statements to an actual police officer.
Correct, a certified peace officer.
Yes, a certified peace officer. She gets to get off from these charges of false allegations, despite the fact, Ron, that this officer received thousands of death threats.
Oh, absolutely. It's destroying his life. And by the way, not the only person whose life is being destroyed, because he's not the only Trooper Hubbard that is in the Texas Department of Public Safety. There's another Hubbard. And of course, when this went out on social media, Instagram, Twitter, and everything, how disgusting is this? People are providing, they're doing their own public research, and they're pulling up names and dates of birth and residences' addresses and all that stuff that people put on social media. So y'all got to watch out of what you put on social media, because it can come back to hurt you, right?
Right.
Right? So anyway, now another officer and his family are all having sorts of problems. Now, Trooper Hubbard, who is involved with, you know, Sherita Dixon Cole, he has to have the Texas Rangers watching his property and watching his family. How horrible is that?
Because the word gets out about what he did, but the word doesn't get out about what he didn't do.
That's correct.
And that's what's very frustrating with all of this. And this is the danger in these false allegations. So we have an officer, not only the officer, his wife, his family.
His kids, right.
His kids, this other officer who has nothing to do with this whatsoever, only because he made a car stop and was nothing but polite. And now, you know, his life is in tatters. Well, he's hired an attorney, and I hope that he sues the pants off of that lady.
And the attorney. And I hope the second officer does the same thing, sweetheart.
Right, because you can't do this to people's lives.
Well, you know, I just think it's disgraceful. And you know what? I think that this has been about a half a dozen different false allegations in the last couple of 3 weeks.
Okay, well, and
so
you know
this
what?
Is a growing trend.
It is. And I'm looking for them actively because I'm just really on a rant about it, that I want people to stop making false allegations against anybody for anything, but mostly against our first responders.
Yeah, the job is tough enough without this type of stuff going on.
It's kind of warm. You want coffee or iced tea tonight?
You know, tonight I think I'm going to switch it up. I'll do the iced tea. I'd like the lemon-flavored one.
You got it.
This is Dr. Ron Martinelli, forensic criminologist and host of A Thread of Evidence on America Out Loud. If you'd like to find out what forensic criminologists really do in the field, and you're tired of the false narratives about law enforcement and want to unpack the cases that I've worked throughout the nation, then please pick up a copy of my new book, The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police, on sale right now at Amazon.com. That's The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police at Amazon.com.
Well, the Out Loud perspective awaits you in life, love, politics, a healthy lifestyle, your faith, personal development, and living an out loud life on AmericaOutloud.com. Blitzer News and Entertainment Network, where you can listen 24/7 on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Well, I'd like to talk about immigration for a few minutes, because this is just an ongoing conversation in this country, and there's something new all the time in the conversation.
Well, it's good to talk about it because we happen to be in California this week.
Oh, yeah. Well, and Governor Jerry Brown just happened to say that Vice President Mike Pence is a bigger problem than illegal immigrants in the migrant caravans.
Well, you know, having lived here all our lives, Linda, we mm-hmm. know that that's far from the truth.
Well, okay? Far from the truth.
And I really like Vice President Pence. I think he's been one of the very best vice presidents we've ever had in this country.
I do, too. I really do like him. And, of course, I really don't like Governor Brown because he's done so much damage to the state of California. And it really was our kind of final blow that made us leave, is all of the things that he's doing. But this with the illegal immigration and Jerry Brown thinking that borders should just be open and all these people are just great for the country. And some of them are, Ron. Some of them truly are. I mean, we are a nation of immigrants.
Well, you and me come from an immigrant families, right? Both of
exactly.
our immigrant families.
But they came in legally. And
big difference.
Exactly. And back in those days, there was vetting done.
You're right.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So it wasn't that our folks came over the border illegally and just showed up. It was that they went through the process properly.
Well, you know, the other thing that I think is really important, and I think this is where a tremendous amount of resources, not only in California, but across the nation go, is to subsidizing not only illegal aliens, but also immigrants that come into this country that don't have the prerequisite language, education, or job skills whatsoever. And we simply can't take every single person into this country. You know, other countries, they ask the applicant, what do you have to bring to the table, right? In many countries, and I know Mexico next door is one of them, that demand a bond for you to be into that country. I know Canada, you have to have a bond. I know in Australia, you've got to have a bond. New Zealand, you've got to have a bond. Italy, you've got to have a bond. There's many countries that require a bond. But listen, we don't need to turn the United States of America into a third world country. And there is also the entire issue, which is a big issue for me, about people who don't want to assimilate into this country and assimilate to our culture and our values.
We're more than happy to let them have their own values, sweetheart, but and their own culture, and we celebrate those cultures with various holidays. But for God's sakes, if you're going to come in here, then let's resonate with American values.
Exactly. One of the arguments is always that we need farm workers and that Americans don't want to do the farm work. And I don't disagree with that we need farm workers, but, you know, there's things that can be done here. We can mechanize more instead of using farm workers so much. But even if we have farm workers come in, I think that they have to be vetted somehow. Because if you look back, and I don't think that most people are aware of this, I know that I wasn't until I read about it in an article that Ann Coulter had put out a while back, that the two World Trade Center bombings that happened were people that were brought in under the farm worker program and said that they were farm workers. Actually, they'd never touched a farm in their lives and actually lied on every single thing that they said when they came into the country. And those were the people that came in and actually never did work on the farm in the country either, even though they came in under that program. And those were the two World Trade Center bombings that we had, were people that came in under that farm worker program.
Well, you know, vetting is a significant problem. Even the, you know, the San Bernardino terrorist couple, Farouk and his wife's name was Malik. Okay, they had shown that there had been absolutely no vetting with regards to Malik coming into this country. So that's a wonderful example. And I think investigators believe that it was Malik that radicalized Farouk, who was actually a San Bernardino County employee. I believed he worked in human services or something there. But that, you know, that pair, you know, back in December, I think it was 2nd, back in 2014, you know, killed 14 people, okay, in that terrorist event. But you know what, let me say something. I disagree with you in just one area, because, you know, my folks were ranchers, and I grew up, you know, with ranching and everything, and you and I have also had a ranch, and you need farm workers, but the farm workers have to be vetted. And sweetheart, I just want to remind you that, you know, back in the 50s and 60s, we had something referred to as the Bracero program in the United States. And what that program allowed Mexican nationals, because they were primarily Mexican nationals in those days, to come across the border, they would get a agricultural worker visa, temporary visa, that would allow them to come into the country for 3 months at a time. So they'd have to come in for about 3 months, and then they'd leave for 3 months. So they come in for harvest season, right? And then they would leave, and then they'd go back to Mexico, whatever country of their origin, and then they would come back again. So they could spend up to 6 months in the United States, in two separate times, to do work here, but they could not bring their families, they could not have kids here, you know, things like that. And the ranches and farms built housing for them, okay? And that program worked pretty darn good, okay? So we do need it. The one thing I want to say, I don't want to see us go to over-mechanization of our farms, because if we do that, we're going to get to these huge corporate agri-farms, and we're going to lose the essence of the American farmer.
Well, I'm not saying to over-mechanize, Ron, and I'm not saying not to bring people in to do the farming. I'm saying exactly what you're saying, that they need to be vetted, because when you have these guys that were brought in under the farm program, I mean, we could spend 20 minutes going through how every single thing about them was missed in their applications.
You're right. I don't disagree.
And then they turned out, they never did go into the farming program. So if you're going to come in for that, then that's what you need to be doing. And somebody needs to make sure that you're doing it. That's the point with that. And the other point is really with the DACA kids, who we hear so much about, that the DACA dreamers are, you know, valedictorians, and they're soldiers, and they're grandmothers, or they're not grandmothers now, but they're grandchildren, they're this, they're that. They're all these wonderful things. That's what the Democrats have been telling us. But you can read about the things that these DACA kids are doing in our country, and there's many of them that are much less stellar citizens than that. There are a number of them that have been held for rapes on children, that have been held for robberies, assaults, sexual assaults, firearms, shooting people. There are lots and lots of things. So these are not all of these DACA people who are here, and by the way, they're unvetted, and nobody knows if they really came in as a DACA kid or not. They really don't know. So they, if you're going to give people this amnesty right now and allow them to be in the country, we've got to have vetting for each one of them. It can't just be a whole amnesty for everybody, because everybody in that there's MS-13 kids there.
And I was, as an old gang investigator, I was gonna, mention the fact that, these unaccompanied minors, this was a huge screw up by the United States government.
And it
continues to be a screw up, and we have to fix that right now. I don't want to see a single one of those congressmen or senators, sweetheart, go on any of these, what do they call it, taking a break until this stuff gets done. Are you kidding me, taking a break? Hell, those guys only work about 4 hours a day as it is, But what happens with these unaccompanied, undocumented minors is they get sucked up right away by MS-13, and they get recruited into gangs like MS-13. And that has caused significant problems that Trump and Pence and, ICE and everybody, and Jeff Sessions, our attorney general, all of these people have been talking about, and that clearly has to end.
Well, it has to end, and we really, we want people coming in this country. That's not even the issue.
I agree.
We just don't want people coming in, and as in all these cases of these people that are dreamers, so-called dreamers, and they're raping our children and they're doing a lot of different illegal things and they're gang members and so forth, we have not even been able to turn them over to ICE. And especially like in California, you can't turn them over. So they just get released back out on the streets again. And this is just a never-ending cycle that we have to stop, as you say, by vetting people, getting them in the country legally and vetting them. And then when they do something wrong, we have to either get them out of the country or put them in jail. But we can't just keep re-releasing these people.
Well, the thing that gets me as an old teacher is in Temecula was a great place to take a look at it. We're out in the country and the school bus comes by and they pick up all the kids, right? Almost every single one of those kids that you see out in Temecula, out on the west side, right, where the groves and everything are Mexican kids.
Right.
Right? Mm-hmm. And they are with their parents, right? And you know that not a single one of those people live there, not single one, because it's all ranchers that live out there. But yet they come over there and they get into the school system, and all of a sudden, all the expenditure of money, because the Supreme Court said we cannot refuse illegal aliens an education in the United States, which is a whole different conversation we could have. But look at all the money that is used, for that. And by the way, it still frosts my socks, because when one of our boys, who will remain nameless, was having problems in school and needed tutoring, the school would not provide a tutor because all their money was going to bilingual education, okay? And I used to be a bilingual teacher, right? And so I know that a tremendous amount of that money that could go to tutoring for all of our kids that are American citizens has been diverted to those that are illegally here, these, DACA kids.
Well, speaking of money, President Trump wants to build the wall and he wants Mexico to pay for the wall. So a study was recently done that said that if we stopped giving all of this money to welfare and benefits and so forth for the illegals that are here, that it will more than pay the $18 billion for the wall.
Well, I think so. And I think you have to look at it, on many different levels. First of all, if you stop the flow of illegal aliens, you can stop the flow of welfare subsidies going to illegal aliens, okay? Then you've got to stop the entitlement programs for the illegal aliens, the Section 8 housing, the EBT, the food stamps, the welfare, all of that. And I think that if you could do that, not only statewide, but nationally wide, you could absolutely build that, fund that wall in just a couple of years.
Well, and the money that we would save by not having drugs pour over the border and not having the arrests and the jails full and all of the different things that come from this tide of people that are coming over the border is all money saving things that we can use to pay for the wall.
you know, just in our criminal justice system and in our penal system, and I'm mostly familiar with California, but I've written about it nationally. In California, over 40% of all the inmates that are locked up in our jails and prisons are illegal. Okay? So just imagine if we could deport all of those criminals. Okay, I'm not just talking about people that don't commit crimes, okay? I'm with the president on that, all right? But those people that do commit crimes need to be deported from this country, especially violent crimes and drug dealing, drug distribution, drug sales, obviously MS-13 gang members, any gang member, okay? If those people were deported out of this country, we would free up almost half the jail cells that we have in California alone. And by the way, I just saw an article just the other day where California, I didn't even know this, I knew this state is in bad financial straits, but $1.3 trillion with a T dollars. That's how bad the state of California is in debt. And then they want to give more money, like in scholarships to illegal alien DACA kids and all this stuff. I'm going, who is paying for this?
That's the money I'm talking about. If that money went to the wall, we could stop this inflow, and then we could, you know, kind of right our ship again. Okay, it's going to take some time to do, but we need to start this process. And governors like Jerry Brown are completely stymieing the process in California.
Well, and although, Xavier Becerra, who's who's the attorney general of the state of California, for God's sakes, has threatened sheriffs and police chiefs that if they violate the sanctuary state laws and inform to ICE that they would be arrested. And I'll tell you what, that is a fight I want to be. I wish I was a sheriff and I would spit in their face, and I would just love to see Xavier Becerra come over and take one of our sheriffs or chiefs of police to jail. I'd like to see what Department of Justice agent would come out there and do that.
Well, in the meantime, most of them are following that rule, and therefore we're letting criminals out every single day that just hurt the people of California again.
Well, you're absolutely right. And you know what? I'm just about done with the iced tea, and I want to get some more ice and get a little bit more iced tea.
You got it.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa. Award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount, or call 844-869-9958.
It's just a little bit warm out here tonight. Man, I've got all the windows in the RV open. I don't want to use the air conditioning, but it might come to that.
It is pretty warm.
Okay, so I've got some stupid litigation stories. Are
oh,
you
love
ready?
Those.
Okay, so here's the friend, you know, and you can't make this stuff up.
No,
all right?
No.
Okay, so here's the first one. I've got a white teenager who's 17 years old who sues his parents because they birthed him and he's a white kid. Right. So he says that being white and being white privileged has caused him so much psychological harm and damage that he blames this all on his parents. How dare you give birth to me knowing that I would turn out to be a white kid? Right.
Oh my gosh.
And he found an attorney to take that lawsuit. And here's what he's doing. The complaint says they're asking for the, you know, psychological, emotional damage and trauma, $20,000. So what does he want to do with the $20,000? He wants to get skin darkening treatments to make him black so that he feels more psychologically centered.
Well, I have news for him. Ink is not going to make him black. It may change the color of his skin, like a big tattoo, but it's not going to change that he has some serious psychological issues here that are going on. And it's not a matter of that he's white, because if you extrapolate this, all of us could sue our parents for something. I mean, for being born and something doesn't go right in your life. This is just ridiculous. And the thing that's sad is that an attorney would take this case and not get him the help or suggest the help that this boy obviously needs.
You know, sweetheart, the thing that really bothers me about this is, and you touched on it already, and I want to come back on it in a second, and that's the mental health aspects, okay? But this, let's just say they win the lawsuit and he does this. Let's say he turns himself from white to black, okay?
Okay.
To me, this is just the beginning of his problems. If he thinks he's going to do this and fit in with the black community, he is sadly mistaken, because how offended would black people be to have a white person turn themselves into being a black person when, you know, black people are proud about being black?
Well, okay? Wait, I want to add
to
something.
To me, it's not a color issue. The issue to me is greater. Okay, so don't look at this in terms of race, in terms of color. Look at this in terms of two things, and then I want to talk to you about that, okay? Look at this in terms of a kid that has serious mental health problems, and what type of attorney who would claim to be an advocate for this kid's best well-being would take this case and further this argument before a court of law. Those, to me, the kid is part of the story, but the attorney and what the hell is in his mind, to me, that's the greater story.
Well, it is a big story, but one thing that you said is that when he turns himself into a black person, he's not going to fit in. And what I have to say is, you don't need to be black to fit in with black people. We are all just people.
We have plenty of black friends, and our friends have white friends, for God's sakes.
And
you know?
We all fit in together, and there is no black and white issue there. So why make it be one? This just furthers this whole narrative that bothers me, is that we are all different because of color. We're not different. We're just people.
And we should celebrate that. And the thing that bothers, I know it bothers you, but I'm just going to speak personally from the heart. I can't stand people that look at everything in life through the prism of color, of race, of culture, of gender, all of these things. This is not what constitutes life. What constitutes life is celebrating who you are, being who you are, and getting along with other people to enjoy your life.
Exactly.
To me, that's what I think it's all about.
Who are who they are, right? That's just it.
I feel bad for this kid.
I do too.
And I'll tell you what, I'd love to interview, I do my show with Thread of Evidence. I'd like to maybe switch it up one night on a Thread of Evidence and interview some of these attorneys.
I think that would be a great legal issue.
Do you think I should do that?
I do think you should do that, because I think people would be interested to understand where this attorney is coming from. And hopefully it's not just money. This is not a big money case, so I don't understand his motivation at all. And as you say, I don't see how he can think that he's actually helping this young man.
Exactly. But I've got another one.
I feel bad for those parents as well.
Oh, yeah. The parents are going, what? You know, I mean, what? This is like the first we've heard of this, they're saying. But anyway, hey, listen, along the lines of kids suing parents for being born, I've got another one.
Oh, no, there's more.
Okay. And excuse the expression, because that's the one that was stated, but ugly woman sues parents for being ugly.
Wow.
Okay. So here is a woman. I think she's about 40 years old. She's been married 3 times. And I will tell you that, you know, there was a picture of her in the paper. Okay. And I would just say, you know, that she believes that she's ugly.
Okay.
And so she turns around, she gets an attorney and sues her parents for having her, because they should have realized, and this is her words, because they were ugly, that I would be born ugly. Okay. I saw the pictures of the parents. I wouldn't classify them as being ugly people. Okay. They're just normal parents. But anyway, she says, It has, being born ugly, has destroyed every relationship I've ever had. I'm under a tremendous amount of psychological trauma. She said, one husband that married me, he divorced me and told the divorce court judge that every morning when I, you know, turned around and looked at her, that it made me nauseous, and so he divorced her. So then she goes and she marries a second man, and this man was, and this is her describing this, not my words. Okay, so this man had vision problems where he was mostly blind, and so during the course of their relationship, he decides he's going to have eye surgery. It ends up being successful, and he divorced her a week later.
Oh dear!
Because she was ugly.
Come
on.
First of all, these people married her in the first place, and she looked that way when she got married. So I disagree with that argument. Obviously, she has some other things going on with her own self-esteem.
Well, it's more than that. When you really take a look at it, it is another one of these people, and God bless her, but she's suffering from mental health problems. But there's more to this story. Okay, she believes that the government should have a mandatory sterilization program for ugly people. Okay, so sterilize these ugly people so they can't have any more ugly people in the world. Okay, does that not tell you that this woman has some serious psychological problems? And again, it goes back to the attorney. What is he doing to advocate for this woman where the money could be better spent in getting, just like with this white kid that wanted to be black, why don't we take this money that you're going to spend on me? I don't need your business, but why don't we take that money and spend it on some good psychological counseling and get you squared away? I mean,
exactly.
just my feeling.
Exactly, because she obviously has mental issues going on. And if she really believes that she's so ugly that her life is ruined, for heaven's sakes, there's plastic surgery out there that can do wonders, can change your entire appearance.
Absolutely.
And maybe the money would be better spent there. But my gut tells me that that's not what's going on with her, that she has other issues.
Okay. And I've got one more. And you're going to love this. Customers file class action suit for $5 million against McDonald's for putting cheese on their Big Macs when they didn't want cheese on their Big Macs or their quarter pounders.
Wait a minute. Somebody is suing McDonald's for $5 million for putting cheese on their burger that they didn't order, is
what
you're saying.
That's exactly.
They didn't order cheese.
They didn't order cheese.
Okay.
I think it's a big deal, Linda.
Well,
I think you're minimizing.
I'd be a billionaire because I get food incorrect from every fast food place I ever go to. And it is a peeve of mine, as you know, because I'm always complaining about it.
Let me tell you, how many times... Oh, now you got me going. How many times have you and I been to Starbucks? Because you're a big Starbucks yuppie, okay? Not me, just saying. But how many times have I gone in a car with you and you're always driving, okay? So you got the Starbucks card and you're talking to the lady and, you know, I get, you know, you order your foo-foo drink and I get a cup of coffee. And then, you know, you're ordering it with whip or you're ordering it with this. I can't even pronounce some of the stuff that you tell that person, okay? It's like a different language for me. And not every single time, but I would say 90% of the time, they screw your order up and you get pissed off.
I know.
Okay?
I know. Now I learned not to drive away very much before I look at what I got in my order, because so often they give me the wrong thing. They give me, you know, of course, my no whipped cream on my latte. Anyway.
But you know, even in the RV, when we go to the, you know, fast food store sometimes, because, you know, we want a quick meal on the road, and we order something, they screw it up like every single time. So now what we do is we stop, and before we go, they give us the package, and before we go, we look in the package, and the people are looking at us like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Right? Well...
Well, I would have to guess that these folks with the cheese probably got their food and went away, you know, maybe in the car, and you're driving, because this happens to me all the time, and then I'm driving and I look and I've got the wrong thing, and it is very frustrating after you've left the place, right? But whether they were there or not, here's the point about this to me. What is the damage that is worth $5 million for cheese on your hamburger.
Oh, no, Linda. No, no. I'm going to back their play here, okay?
Because you go right ahead, Ron.
I looked at the complaint. It's depending on what kind of hamburger you get at McDonald's, right? Because they're not just doing the frozen patties anymore. Now they've popped it up and they give you fresh, you know, some of their burgers, their more expensive burgers, have actually fresh meat, okay?
Yeah, but they didn't order an expensive burger
here. But wait a minute. Okay. Here's the injury, okay? Because when you have a lawsuit, you got to have an injury. 30 cents on a regular Big Mac, 30 cents. And for the high-profile burger, 90 cents.
So there's your damages, 30 okay. cents and 90 cents.
What
Thank
do you think
you.
It's costing them for the attorney? Thinking it's costing them more than 30 cents or 90 cents for the attorney?
Of course, but I you didn't say if McDonald's would not replace the food for them. You didn't say, because honestly...
Well, I'm just reading off the complaint, and it didn't say that, so I can't put that in there.
I will say, in defense of McDonald's, that at the times that I've gotten the wrong thing there, and I certainly have, when I say something about it, I am always taken care of very quickly. So, you know, I can't imagine that it wouldn't be the case here. But again, this is another ridiculous lawsuit, and an attorney that should never have taken something like this. $5 million is outrageous.
Well, you know, I'll just end my comments to you by saying that these are the types of things that screw up our civil justice system and tie up our courts when there are so many more deserving plaintiffs out there and defendants that need to have important issues dealt with in their lives. But I'll just leave it with that. Are you ready for some good news?
Well, I'm ready for some good news. Do you have some?
Because I've got... You know what? I know that you're, you know, you're an environmental person, right?
No.
And so, yes, you are. Stop it. Anyway, so I want to just talk about something because you and I, a couple of weeks ago, we talked about the big plastic islands.
The islands in the ocean. Yes. Okay. Fascinating.
Okay. So this feeds into that, right? So this is out in Kerala, India, which is out in the Arabian Ocean. And so, you know, they got a lot of plastic junk out there in the water. So, and it's wrecking the fishing. So what the government decided to do through a couple of agencies in India, environmental protection agencies like we have in the States, is that they decided that they were going to build a recycling center, and then they hire fishermen to go out, and instead of fishing for fish, they are fishing for plastic.
Okay.
So they're putting out all their nets, and they have, you know, all their, you know, big and personal nets, right? You know, like handheld nets, and they are going out in the ocean, and they are collecting all the plastic that they can find, right? And polypropylene, and, you know, everything else that's out there, old fishing nets, anything that's floating on the water, and they are collecting that, and they're bringing it in to the recycling center. So 5,000 fishermen a day leave the port of Kolam to go fish for plastic garbage. And so far, they have gotten tens of tons of plastic garbage. So what do they do with this? They recycle it. They turn it into really tiny gravel, and then they incorporate that plastic gravel into other building materials for road construction.
Oh, that's great.
I thought that was just fantastic.
For them to have that much plastic out there in their ocean, I'm wondering if they're in one of those little...
one of those current things that makes all of it collect.
Because that would be interesting to know. Well, you know what? Speaking of trash and things that have to do with trash, there's a young lady named Joy Joaquim, who's an economics student at the University of Texas, and she's in Austin. She's concerned about the food for the world. So what she did is she had a thought that possibly, you know, we have these unused areas where trash has been deposited. So we have trash dumps. And then, you know, when they're done, they cover them all over with dirt, right?
Oh, yeah, right. Okay. Sure. They put some methane pipes in there to pipe out the methane. Yeah, sure.
Right. So she was wondering if it would be possible to go to those dump sites and grow food on top of them.
Ew.
Now, wait a minute. They are covered with dirt, and so she did. And she did an experiment, and she grew crops such as radishes, eggplant, bell peppers, cucumbers, cantaloupe, those kinds of things. And then she had it all tested, and the food came back perfect.
Oh, boy, I'll tell you what, you'd have to convince me of that.
Well, I mean, there's the Food and Safety Board there said that it was all good. So there's over 6,000 of these landfills, and if you take all of those areas and think that they could be planted with food that is healthful, then that's a really good thing. So I think that she's come up with some solution that, you know, could be used in the future to help us with any food shortages we might experience.
Well, that's pretty nice, but I would just say, man, as long as it's tested, because just think of the junk that is inside a refuge pile, you know?
Well, I understand, but the dirt, the roots of these plants that I've just mentioned don't go down that far.
Okay.
And it's covered with dirt. And by the way, I mean, a lot of those things, yes, there's a lot of bad stuff in there, but, you know, the food did come back okay. So I think it, you know, it's a possibility for down the road to reclaim this land and use it for something useful.
That sounds great. Well, sweetheart, you got a couple of good news stories before we call it a night?
Well, I do. And, you know, the good news stories for me today, they involve both police officers and animals, so that makes them doubly good.
That's great. We get our heroes of the day, and we get an animal story out of it.
These two guys are heroes. In Tampa, Florida, we have a police officer, Bart Wester, who saw a homeless man as he was on patrol, and the homeless man was collecting money from people, saying that he needed the money for his dog who needed veterinary care. And rather than go up and arrest him or stop him from doing it, which he could have done, he took the man and his dog to Vets for Pets, which is a place that does veterinary care, charitable veterinary care
in
the area.
Nice.
Right. So he took the dog, and the dog got the care that it needed, and it did need to go to the vet. And the police officer not only transported them there, but he paid for the services for the dog as well.
Oh, wow. Love that.
Took them back to, you know, where they belong together. So yeah, that's a great story, because again, it's an officer going one step further and helping both the man and his animal.
When he didn't have to,
of course. Well, and that's what they do. So the next one is kind of an interesting, it's sad but happy. We're in Washington Township, in New Jersey. There's a police officer by the name of Jay Vernon. And Jay Vernon was called out to a traffic accident that was somebody that had hit a deer.
Oh, boy. You know, we drive so slow going into our ranch in Texas for the deer gauntlet.
Yeah, we have so many deer. But somebody hit this deer, and the deer was just about to be a mama. And the mama deer died, and the police officer did an emergency C-section to get out the little fawn, which was born healthy.
You're kidding me.
No. Now, there was another little fawn in there that didn't make it, but he did save one of these little baby deer and did it right there on the spot. So he's my hero of the day.
Well, those are two really good stories.
Yeah, and they both are things that people didn't have to do, Ron. They're things that where they took that extra step. And that's what people don't understand about police officers, is how much good that they do every single day. And, you know, here's two animals that are in good condition because of those thoughtful guys.
You know what I like about our coffee things at night when we do this together? You know, not only the decompression after, you know, hard days of work, but I love to end our discussions on a positive note and have some good news and heroes of the day. I personally really like that.
Well, I'm glad. I like it too. It renews your faith in humanity every day.
Absolutely. So, tell you what, I've got the dog and
I've got the air conditioning.
And I've got the cups. All right. I'll meet you in the boudoir.
Okay.
All right. I love you, sweetheart.
Love you.